Certainly, one of the privileges of serving as the president of Rabbinic Alumni is to have the opportunity to introduce our Rosh HaYeshiva, Dr. Norm Lam, to this setting this evening. Dr. Lam certainly has become synonymous with Yeshiva ever since he became president, and I've always had the notion that my primary relationship with Yeshiva since leaving Yeshiva is primarily in the context of a Parashat Hakol. I found an interesting insight in this week's Parsha that expands the notion of a Parashat Hakol beyond what we normally understand it to be. During the course of Avram's discussion with the Kadosh Baruch Hu about the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah, Avram at one point acknowledges his inability to really take upon himself the cause. We find the Torah tells us, "Vayan Avram vayomar hineinu ha'altu l'daber v'anochi nocho v'efer." Generally, we understand pshat as simply meaning that who am I to challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, we find that Rashi focuses on not the present, but the past in Avram's life. Rashi says, "Anochi ofer v'efer ukfar chayisi ro'i liyos ofer ayidei hamalochim v'efer ayidei nimrod dulei rachamecha asher omdui." Rav Yitzchak Greenberg suggests that the essence of Rashi's statement with respect to Avram's comment of Anochi Ofer V'Efer, focusing on that particular moment, that Avram was not simply thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having been saved from those two precarious moments in his life, where he was challenged in order to maintain his faith when Nimrod threatened to kill him, and certainly in the context of his encounter with the Malachim when he was about to set forth into battle. The Kadosh Baruch Hu saved him there as well. But Avram was saying that not only then, but every moment of my life since then, I owe to those moments. My Hakaras HaTov is not only limited to a particular point in time in the past, but Hakaras HaTov has to maintain itself all through my life. Every experience that I have, every moment that I live, every breath that I take, I owe to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he was matzeh me at those particular points in time. So the notion of Hakaras HaTov that Rashi is really teaching us in terms of Avram's own expression was exponentially greater than simply a matter of a particular point in time. And I really believe that when it comes to our relationship with Yeshiva and in terms of our recognition of our Rosh HaYeshiva, Dr. Norman Lam, that while truly we owe Yeshiva a debt of gratitude for having been the place from which we learned our Torah, and the base medrash from which we all emerged. But what it means as well is that everything that we have experienced since then, in the context of this Torah, also we owe to Yeshiva. And even beyond that, those of us who left Yeshiva even before Dr. Lam became the president, we still have a debt of gratitude to him and to Yeshiva for having maintained Yeshiva, for having maintained an institution which is our bedrock in terms of our relationship with Torah and our ability to serve our communities. This is what Yeshiva is. It's the height of our achievement. It represents all that we have been and represents all that we can become. And throughout our lives, professional as well as personal, the Hakaras HaTov that we owe Yeshiva, and we owe you, Dr. Lam, is something that will always energize us. a privilege and a pleasure to meet to introduce our Rosh HaYeshiva, Dr. Norman Lang.
I think one Hakaras HaTov deserves another Hakaras HaTov, so thank you very much for thanking me. My plan this evening is to talk about a theme which is extremely relevant and very current. But I want to do so in as non-political a manner as possible. The theme is Shalom, peace. I'm going to begin with Shalom in the Reshus HaYochid and then the Reshus HaDatan. First on the domestic scene, and then on the communal or national scene. And I'm not going to give you my own Torahs. What I plan to do is simply present Makoros and see how the Makor develops itself and what we can get from it and go on from one to another. And if my bias is showing, you should know it's inadvertent. I don't intend to suggest, either directly or by implication, any specific application to political or communal or social problems. But if you interpret it that way, I can't stop you. I'm going to try to avoid just regurgitating well-known makoros on the importance of peace, of shalom. So all you have to do is look in the medrash on Yotem Lecha Shalom, the whole list of you find all the material you need. It's not what I'm aiming at. I might add, incidentally, that shalom in the Navi, in Yeshayahu, is synonymous with the essence of goodness. If you want to know what is goodness, the answer is shalom. Bahardaya, Yoser or Uvore Choshech, Oser Shalom, Uvore Et Hara, as opposed to our bracha is only a paraphrase. So the symmetry is the Yoser or Uvore Choshech. Oser Shalom, Uvore Et Hara. So shalom is goodness. In other words, that's why it is a kli masik bracha, because it is the essence of all that is good and noble and holy and pure. Let me start then with shalom bias. The makor for shalom bias, as you all know, is the Gemara in Shabbat, the Bamamad Likin, Dr. Gimel. The Gemara says, Amarova, Pshitali, Ner, Beisoy, Vener, Hanukkah. If a poor man has only enough money to buy a candle or to buy a candle for the house, which means a Ner Shabbos, or a candle for Hanukkah, Ner Beso Odif, it is preferable to the halacha as you give preference to the Ner Beso or the Ner Shabbos, Mishum Shloim Beso, but that's a symbol of Shalom Bayis. We'll see later why. Ner Beso V'Kiddush Hayom is similarly, if you have a choice between a cup of wine or a candle, the answer is you take the cup of wine, because of Shloim Beso. And what is the makor for shalom bias? The Gemara says two blocks later in the Kafe, but tis not cause a posit from Echa, but tis not me shalom nafshi, my nefesh, my soul rejected or had no relation with shalom, nashisi tova, I forgot what is good, and suddenly again the parallelism. The tis not me shalom nafshi, nashisi tova. Tov and shalom are equivalent. So what does it mean to Adlakas Ner Shabbos? I had a Shalom bias reflected in Ner Shabbos. What's the relationship? So Rashi says, Shebnei Beisei Mitzvahim Veshei Bachoshech. Because people have tsar when they sit in the darkness. That's why Shalom bias is enhanced or affected by Ner Beisei. This has a halakhic consequence, incidentally. And one of the Achronim, he says, he asked the Shaila, if a man is going to his sukkah on Shabbos, and he has a light, they didn't have electric lights, they had candles, and the candles all blow out. What is the halacha? Does he require to eat in the sukkah, or does he go upstairs and where there is light and eat? And the answer is, he goes upstairs, he goes back to his home. Why does he not eat in the sukkah? because he is a mitzvah. And he quotes Rashi, Rashi says mitzvah, without, when the absence of light, in the absence of ner, mitzvah. And mitzvah quotes him in a sukkah, so there has to be no tsar physically, no tsar of rain or snow or heat. The tsar of choshech is enough to disqualify the eating of the sukkah that night, and he has to go into his home. There's similar to Rashi. Other Rishonim say is because if you sit in the dark, you bump into things, nichshal, you koes, you get into anger, you get into fights, you bump into each other. In the absence of light, you literally bump into each other, not only metaphorically, and that itself is a cause of tzar. But then that's one group of reasons. But then there's a second reason. The second reason, and I'll quote you part of that, Maima, is not exactly calculated to warm the cockles of feminists. It's, in fact, a thoroughly anti-feminist explanation. And that is, gracious Rabba, Shalos Rabbi Yeshua. They asked Rabbi Yeshua a whole list of questions about the difference between men and women. And, for instance, he says, Mimatif Neema, Nitan Ba Mitzvah Nida, Ayadeisha Shokha, Domari Shal Adamarisha. It's all the fault of Chava. She calls she has Domim, he was Nigzar Morves, so therefore she has to pay with the Hilchas Nida. And so on and so forth. And one of them is, that Neema, Nitan Ba Mitzvah Ner Shabbos. Why is the woman the most important? We get to the first one to get the Mitzvah of Ner Shabbos, she has priority. Because she extinguished the neshama, the light of Adam Adishan, and therefore she has the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos. Again, I'm not saying which I prefer, but these are the two reasons that I give it. There incidentally is a third reason by the Maharal, which happens to be very sophisticated and has many consequences, which I will not elaborate upon. You're free to do it yourself. Let me quote him. It's in his Ner Mitzvah. He says, when it comes to Ner Shabbos, Soda Shia Ner Mamish, it has to be a candle. And mind you, it has to be a candle. Lahosi should not be a torch or a lantern. Or like a flucht in the licht, like an havdalah, where the two lights merge. Why must it be separate Ner? You have two candles, not as an avuka, come together, but separate, to signify that Sholem Bayis means each one in his own realm without invading the precincts of the other. Not to cross the boundary to another. Not to invade somebody else's space, which is a concept that requires further elaboration and further development. I think the psychologists amongst you will probably get the biggest kick out of this particular explanation. But it's worth mentioning. How does Sholem Bayis now compare to other halakhs? What's its rank in the hierarchy of values? There are a number of them. For instance, There's an Isra of Chanifa. The Archa Sadiqim points out that Chanifa is a very ugly trait. But there are times that it's overshadowed and it's Mevutal Nitcha because of other reasons. And one of them, he has a whole list of things when your Chanifa is Mutta. And one of them is, Chanifa is Mutta when it comes to Shalom Bayis. The Yachanif Adam Leishto Mishom Shalom Bayis. A man should flatter his wife. Don't be sparing too much when it comes to giving your wife a compliment. Why? That makes a Shalom Bayis. If you never show appreciation, you don't have Shalom Bayis. I think it's one of the Gedolei HaMusa who said that the chet, what was the chet of Adam Arishon after all? I mean, his wife gave him the stuff and he ate it. I mean, most of us are that way. You don't. So what was the chet of Adam Arishon? The chet of Adam Arishon was that when he was yearning for companionship, lo tov hayosavu, he tried talking to all the behemoths and the chayas, no companionship. The angels were no companionship. Who was his companion? Finally, the Rebbeinu Shalom gave him a chava. And then at the first moment when there was a crisis, what does he say? So he passed the buck and he blamed his wife. That was ingratitude. You see, better, that was a sign of ingratitude. So his hate was one of ingratitude, and then therefore the concept of shalom bayis takes precedence over chanifa. Someone once said, if you want shalom bayis, if you want to have shalom, tell it to bayis. Which is something that is another form of chalifa, which is highly to be recommended. Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva Nigras Moshe has an interesting shaila, and the way he phrases the Tshuva is important, and you have to know how to read between the lines. He says the question of a kohen. Kohen has a relative, or especially a wife, in the hospital. Can he go to visit her, knowing full well that there's a morgue in the hospital, and that he may be metameh himself? This is some of the kahanim. He writes as follows: V'lachem b'tzorach gadol yesh lahati al kohen v'vaker chol karov kagam mitnei sar kagam mitnei saro hagadol shacholah hu aviv al benoy mishum shalom hamishpacha shem krovei ishto, even a wife's relatives, but kol shekeng she ishto chola. Shehu inyan shalom bayis gedon. Avol yevare ma she'efshalo am yeshem ato meis Yisrael. You have to check whether there are any Jewish corpses there. V'im yevare, im yevare, yesh lismoch she'leka shom meis Yisrael. You can't really check that quickly, then, or that easily, then you have to assume that there are no meis Yisrael. The after they ha'cholim ha'godel tuba, kohar the Bellevue Hospital, even in Bellevue, it's almost a startling headache, because factually in Bellevue, or any large hospital, any one of the great urban hospitals in Jewish neighborhoods, you will find Mesa Yisrael. But the Moshe says, to Shalom Bayis, if you know it definitely, you can't do it. But if you don't know it definitely, you can work on assumptions. So Shalom Bayis invites certain halachic fictions, or that's too strong a word at this point, although there are halachic fictions, but halachic assumptions without further investigation in order to assure Shalom Bayis. Let me read you a medrash. You may have heard this before, may have read it, maybe not, but I think it has a certain relevance to the importance of shalom vis-a-vis other Jewish values and concepts. This message comes from one of the Eisenstein collections. Maisa Barad Meya, Shahayadoresh Belele Shabbos Vesach Nesis. You probably know the message, but let me go over it anyway. He was dashing. The mayor of Kanti was a great dashing. One woman came to hear him and said she liked it. She loved the speaker. Husband came home from davening. His wife wasn't there. She stayed in the shul to hear the drasha. By the time she came back, the light was out already, and the husband's flame was ignited. Amala bala hechan hayis, where were you? Amalai shamati koil hadashish of the beis haknesses v'orei b'libi yashapti hazman zeh. Notice, he didn't say his drasha was a good drasha, but he speaks well. Koilei orei. Nishba bala, so the husband took an oath immediately, shalod, must be a very nice fellow, shalod tovay l'reshusay, she's not allowed to come into his property, until she spits in the face of the Dashan. As I said, he was a pleasant chap. Because Abmeya was the great Hannah. She didn't refuse to do it, and instead she went to her parents' home. People talked about it, and word came to Abmeya what happened. What did Abmeya do? So he said, got hold of a woman and said to her, find out where this woman is. So she went and she found her sitting with other 10 women on Shabbos, and they were talking about the whole situation. So this woman whom the mayor sent went back and reported to him where she was. So he went to this kaffi klatch, halachis al anoshim, the yoshev alal pesach, and he waited at the door. I'm mayor. He didn't say I'm Rabbi Doctor Hagron Hagadol Meir. Mayor. Shem miyesh b'kan nishi yodas luchay sha'ayim b'nei she'eni morda alai. I have a bad eye. My eye, in the charming language of the Medrash, has rebelled against me, and I have someone to cure it. In those days, the form of cure was an incantation of some kind, lala lachash. And I might point out that it's not recommended today. In fact, it's an issa. In other words, an issa of the Gainim to use the refuah of Shas, because they're no longer a refuah of the Duka. So not only that you don't have to, but it's an issa. The chaplain at Beth Israel recently, one of our chaverim, told me stories about the kind of refuah of Shas that I use by Hasidim, much as the consternation of the local medical personnel. So he says, is anyone here who can give a lakash on my eye? So the woman said to this woman whose husband had abandoned her, lakashi eino, but I keep it fun of, you should taste the mishmuras balik, have an opportunity. But the lakash was, poo-poo-poo, was the spit in the eye that was offensive, and therefore you'll be able to satisfy your husband's shmur. But she refused, because how can I go and do this to the Godel Hador, to the mayor? Bishel Derechim Hen, so she wanted to leave with the other woman. Now listen, Ochazah Biyodah, the mayor took her by the hand, grabbed her by the hand. The Amalo Lachashi Eini Kedesha Tia Refuah Al Yodeh. I want you to do this in my eye. Omra Losh, she said, Chaye Roshka, I swear by your head. I can't do it. So he said in Cain, if you can't do the lachash, roiki b'sheva po'amim. Spit in the eye 7 times, v'hakadosh baruch hu yishlach refuah. Omra in ani yachola. I can't do such a thing. V'lohi nicha, I didn't let her hand go. Asher yarka b'fonav sheva p'amim. The ochaz b'yoda, when she finished, he took her by the hand. V'halicha le, do you notice what he's doing? This is Rav Meir. He's not a graduate of Yeshiva University. I see. I don't know. When it comes to these things, we become anachronistic. The Ochasa Biyoda, Vahilicha Lateis Bala, and took her to the home. Vahamala Imri Lebale, Atonish Batesh Odek Lefada Pahamachas, Kvayiraki Sheva Panim. Vahalach Lebeis Akneses, and he went back to, the mayor went back to his shul. Require Yadu B'Dover, when the thing became known to the Talmidim of Rav Meir, Omdu Talmidim Omdu Lo Rabbeinu, Kozer Bozisa B'Torah V'Lomdeha, you allow such a Bizoyan at Torah and a Bizoyan at Talmidim Chachamim, Omar Lehem, Kedai Loi L'Meir Li Yois Kerabai, and Meir can be no better than his Rebbe. Ma Shem Hamaphora Shenichtav B'Kedusha, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yimocha Kedei Lasa Sholem and Ishla Ishla knows what the Sveita. In order to make Sholem and Ishla Ishla, you had to take the Shem on the forest on a cloth and dissolve it. Mimocha. Meir Alachas Kamba Vakama. So what do you see from this remarkable medish? It's really a very human story, but a remarkable one. And a remarkable one. That the Mitzvah of Sholem Bayis takes precedence over Bizoyan HaTorah, over Negiya, and over the Isra of Bizoyan Talmidei Chachamim, which is a whole range of Isurim, and nevertheless, Sholem Bayis takes precedence over all of them. Which means here we have an actual application of the Halacha, not merely something theoretical. Of course, it doesn't mean that Sholem Bayis takes precedence over all of Averis, but certainly over a large range of them. Now, so far we've been talking about Sholem Bayis on the domestic level. Does this go beyond? And here's where we come into more sensitive areas. And I maintain that it does. It goes into all areas. of life, including the social and political. There's a Gemara in Sukkot, which we're all acquainted with, that when David was building the Beis HaMikdash, he dug a ditch in order to build, and Bishar Shekara David Shitin, and the Tahom came up, water, he must have struck a well, a powerful well, or the well, which is the foundation of the world, and it threatened to inundate the entire world. So David the Melech said, is anyone from here who knows how to stop it? Whether you're allowed to write the Shem HaMeforesh, use the Shem HaMeforesh to stop the waters, there was no answer. And he was very upset. He says, if someone is not going to come forth and someone knows it, Yechonek v'gerono, let him choke to death. So Achitofa was there, so he says, Achitofa nasach as. Gemara, you know the Gemara, he was not say kavachomer li aslo. He said, he made a kavachomer of his own, and he said, umma lasa is sholem ben ishla ishto, again referring to the Slovenian Union. Ben ishla ishto, amra torah shmi shenifta b'kdusha yimoche al hamayim, therefore lasa is sholem l'chol ha'olam, l'chol ha'am kulo, al achas kama v'kama. So what do you see here? You see here that the lav of Leisasin came to Hashem Elokeichem, which is a major lav in the Torah, is also nitche, where you have bitul hashalom. In order to establish shalom, you're allowed to be over an isra of Leisasin came to Hashem Elokeichem. That's one thing. And the second thing you see is that the musrag, the concept of shalom bayis, is broader than the domestic, but also reaches the universal level. And this is obvious at a universal level. You're talking about the whole world. I also, in this sense, would like to refer you to a passage in the Mesha Chochma, which I had been unaware of earlier, but I came across it by sheer luck. It's in the Shalach, and the Mesha Chochma makes a remarkable distinction. He says, when it comes to individuals, when it comes to such things as Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayas, then there, or other Shvichas Damim, there are clear onshim. Onshim of Skila, of Malkus, of Avon Yisus Bezin, all kinds of Yisurim. However, when it comes to ethical, moral, social violations, you don't find any great onshim. For instance, Rechilas, Lashon Hara, imagine if we got punished with Malkus for every time we spoke Lashon Hara. I mean, it would be, no part of the body would remain without warts. So it would seem, therefore, that the isurim ben adam lamakam are far more serious than the isurim ben adam lachavero. However, the Meir Simcha points out, that is true for individuals, but when it comes to tzibur, it's the exact reverse. And he brings the chorus, I don't want to go into all of them in great detail. He says, for instance, Dore, the Gemara says in Yerushalmi says in Peya, Dore shall David kulam tzadikim hayu, vayidei shehayu behem dilitorim hayu neitzum b'melchama. In David's days, they were all tzadikim, but they talked Lashon Hara against each other. So they were destroyed. Aval Dore shall achav, oivdi avidu zara hayu, vayidei shelo hayu behem dilitorim hayu yodam b'melchama v'nasrim. Why did Achav's troops win? He says, because even though they were over by the Zara, but they had the decency not to speak ill of each other, were no dilatura. So you see, and he goes on in detail, I don't want to go into it, I suggest you see it yourself, it's a beautiful passage. So when it comes to the tzibur, they are punished only for marikos nimusios, only for ethical social violations. They are not, the tzibur as a whole is not punished for major averas, such as Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayas, only for Nimusios, whereas in the single individuals not. Because a tzibur requires shalom, requires internal peace in order to be able to flourish. Without it, it gets destroyed. So a tzibur that has Dilaturin will be destroyed. A tzibur can have even Avodah Zarah, but if there is internal peace, then they will survive. I think it's an important distinction that the Mesha Chochma makes. Let me now speak about the question of shalom, what shall I say, with regard to heterodoxy, with regard to with regard to avarice of a different kind. And I'll give this to you. It's the tshuva in my grandfather's sefer in the Emek Halacha. He was asked at the end of World War II, a fascinating shaila. A man had made a neda that if his son came home from the war, the shalom, he'll give $100 to the Crown Heights Talmud Torah in those days, which later to become the Crown Heights Yeshiva. So the executive director, so the man, the boy, the young fellow came home from the war, and he was complete. He was healthy, he had all his Abraham, but he came home with a shiksa in tow, with a non-Jewish bride. So the father was distraught, and he said, this is not my concept of coming home to Sholem. I'm not giving a penny to the yeshiva. So the executive director of the yeshiva, a man I remember yet, when I was a child, he was there, Mr. Brandeis, came to my grandfather and asked the shaila, can the yeshiva force him to collect, to pay up? So my grandfather came with a tshuva from a mishnah, which is really a in the shechav. There's a mishnah in Tzvul Yom, and that is that a man has a ditch that's cemented, obviously, and it's used to contain either wine or oil, either yayin or shemen, and he has to give tuma. So what he had to be good tuma, he throws a pail into the ditch, and he lifts it up with a pulley, and he says, this is going to, whatever I can bring up will be truma. He puts it aside to truma. Now what happens if, and he says, Hakorah Mesabar, he says it's going to be truma, and he says, Hadezet truma amanat sheya'aleh sholom. This is truma on condition that I, when I bring it up, it'll be peaceful, which means he probably meant it won't spill out, but that's the language he uses. Amashiyah l'shalom. So the Tanakhama says, Shalom min hashever u'min hashvicha, avaloi min hatumah. Shalom means that he's making it truma if the pail doesn't break or if it doesn't spill, because if it does and it falls into the whole barrel becomes also through it, except for our client. But it does not refer to tuma. If a sheres fell in, that is not called violation of shalom. Says so. Tanakhama says shalom and hashevah and hashvicha avolo min ha-tuma. Rav Shimma disagrees and says af min ha-tuma. That if it became tumay, that's also that also contradicts the concept of shalom. So what do you see from this Mishnah? That the concept of shalom refers to what? To physical wholeness. Shevet and Shvicha. It does not refer to metaphysical wholeness, which means tuma. Therefore, said my grandfather, and what is the halacha? It so happens the halacha of Rav Rishonim is with the Tanakhama. So my grandfather said, okay, this man said, I'm making a neder to give $100 to a yeshiva, manas, that my son comes back, the shalom. And he came back, Sholem ha-shevet, Sholem ha-shvicha, but not ha-shvicha. But, with this non-Jewish bride in tow. So he says, according to Rav Shimon, that's not called Sholem. But he says, Asmen Atuma. According to the Tanakhama, it is called Sholem. Because Sholem does not refer to religious orientation. It refers only to physical breakage. And therefore, the man is required to pay the $100. Well, do I need to go further? I mean, you obviously get the idea. Shalom means that the first requirement of shalom is to see to it that you don't, as the Maharal said, bunk into each other. That you don't get in each other's way, and you don't violate each other's space. Shalom min ha-tuma is a higher degree, and is not necessarily, and that's a machlokes between Tanakhama and Rav Shimon. And the halakha apparently is with the Tanakhama. I want to say something else about the rabbinic role in creating shalom. You know, in most, you know the Gemara in Brachas, Omer Ablozer Mar Bachinia Talmidei Chachamim Barim Shalom Ba'olam, Shenema, Kol B'nai Chavudei Hashem, Rav Shalom Nayach, Al-Sikri Bar Nayach, Al-Azor Nayach. Okay. Incidentally, you know, this Al-Tamid Chum Martin Sholem Bolam has a long history. There's one story about this German professor who spent 12 years studying humor in the Talmud, and at the end he said, "No humor, only one joke that I find." The other one is if Yashub Bad Riska, the Beit HaLevi, who said, how can you say Tamid Chacham Barim Sholom Bolam? He said, because if you have a shul, what a balabatim do? Pleading us, they fight. So they're fighting against each other all the time. But when a rabbi comes to town, they all unite against him. It's rather pathos in this, because that was his story of his career in the rabbinate. Wherever he went, they united against him. He was a very strong-willed person in this, like in the Soloveitchik fashion. But I'm referring to something else. In both the Sephardic and in the Ashkenazic tradition, but especially the Sephardic tradition, before this Gemara in Brochus, we recite another Gemara in Chagiga. And that Gemara is Tanda de Be'eliyo, And normally, the two of them are placed in conjunction. First you have the Tanna de Be'eliyo, right? And then you have the Gemara and Brachos. Why? Why were these two Gemaras co-joined? A bigger question. There's something very weird about this. You say, you bring proof from a pasuk. So what would you expect? What would you expect? The next thing to be, a halacha. Learn you have to have the tefillah tzedayim every morning. Learn that you have to make a bracha on Peiros. Learn any halacha. Instead, you come up with a haggadah. Why? I mean, why? What happens in the morning when you make birchas haTorah? So we all follow the Yerushalmi, and what do? We learn Al Asar. Immediately you learn from the post of the Torah, Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. So why don't we do the same thing with Halacha? And therefore learn the Halacha. So we come up with another Agada, with about, what's the answer? That's the Halacha. Tamidei Chacham and Marim Sholem is not a description. It's a normative statement. This is the way a Talmid Chacham must behave. We have no choice. So Talmidei Chachamim who are Machar Chaveidim are not Talmidei Chachamim. Because a Talmid Chacham must be Mar B'Sholem. And if he's not Mar B'Sholem, he is in violation. It is not normative. It is not descriptive. It is normative. And it's not even a recommendation for a criterion who is and who is not a Talmid, genuine Talmid Chacham. It's a law, it's an obligation, it's a sacred requirement. The function of Talmidei Chachamim is to be peacemakers, and not as so often happens, peacebreakers. It means that, whether here or in Israel or anywhere in the world, we have got to influence by education and not by legislation. We've got to teach and not coerce. We've got to be authoritative without being authoritarian, which is very often our normal bent. We've got to persuade people and not bully them. We've got to consult and not insult. That means that, for one thing, we in the rabbinate must learn a degree of intolerance. That we ought not to tolerate people, no matter what their official position, either from self-righteous zeal or from, as a result of an unzipped ego, seek to destroy reputations of people who dare to disagree with their opinions or policies. And I want to say this is not at all personal, because I confess to you that when I am attacked by such people, and it happens regularly, if it's not from a podium, it's from the mail I receive, and I have bulging files of very interesting things about myself, it doesn't overly disturb me. I sleep at night. I mean, I don't sleep at night, but the reason for why I'm not sleeping is not that. Believe me, it does not disturb me in the least bit. I feel a great deal of pity for such people who seem to derive a great deal of psychological satisfaction from pillorying many people whom you and I, all of us know, including myself, sometimes especially myself, and who seem to feel that owning a Xerox machine or a computer and having a passing knowledge, but not too much, of the English language entitles one to become his lecker de cahier, as they were called before the French Revolution, all over the world. But I can live a full life even with the scorn of such intemperate individuals, and I'm not afraid of them. What does bother me very much is how very many prominent people who are really of the type who seek to bully rather than persuade, how it affects their Talmidim. Young men who otherwise are bright and otherwise decent, who seem to have been brainwashed to think that Kol Dava Asa is Mutter if the Rosh Yeshiva does it, and that everything that comes from the mouth of a Rebbe or a Rosh Yeshiva is Sinaitic in its incontrovertibility, that there's no second opinion permitted, and that anyone who disagrees is automatically consigned to the neither world of Klal Yisrael. Worse yet, the feeling that everything you do must be approved from on high, and that there's nothing worth knowing that your Rebbe didn't tell you. I've had such experience that I must tell you. Some young people come back from Eretz Yisrael, and I had this discussion just this past year. Yeah. Young man came back, and he wants to know, what am I doing in yeshiva? He tells me. I say, what do you mean? He said, why am I here? Why am I studying all these courses? I said, you have to get an education. He said, I don't need an education. I said, well, how would you find out about the world about you? He said, because everything that I have to know, my Rebbe will tell me. I know his Rebbe. He said, it doesn't work. but the attitude, which once upon a time I would have thought is a Yetzer Dayfen, and it's weird, it's bizarre, but it's becoming more and more prevalent. Expressed perhaps by this youngster quite crudely, but the underlying attitude is becoming more and more acceptable, it's becoming domesticated. And that, I think, is a terrible thing. It goes against the whole grain of the independence of thought which Yahadus demands of us, and without which you can't open a Black Gemara and try to understand it. So, Philo says in his commentary on Bereshis, well, basically what he's saying, to put it in modern language, is that sociology recapitulates theology. That the pagan who believe that gods are always, that they're a plurality of gods, a multitude of gods, what do these gods do all day? They fight with each other. They steal each other's wives, they declare war on each other. So if you're a polytheist, then your gods are always at war. And if your gods are at war, if your theology is one of conflict, then you do not value shalom in your own relations with the rest of the world. So you will not have peace here. This is you can even show that it's an apostate. We say it every day several times. What do we say? That proves this. Oyser Sholom Dimromov, who Yasa Sholom Olein of Akal Yisrael. We believe there's Sholom up above because there's only one God. He's not fighting with anyone. There's no celestial battle taking place. Therefore, who Yasa Sholom Olein of Akal Yisrael. But I suggest that the reverse is true as well. That perhaps theology recapitulates sociology, and therefore people who functionally disdain shalom and allow themselves to deride it and deprecate, no matter what they say rhetorically, but functionally, practically, who cause a great deal of dissonance and disunity in the community, that there's a begam in their amuna in Yichud Hashem, because if they really believed in Yichud Hashem, they would try to instill Sholem in the world. But if they're Mechacha, they did. If they're people who cause all these stirrings of conflict, that must mean that there's something lacking in their religious, in their fundamental religious beliefs. You know the old Gematria. What is the Gematria of Echad? 13. What else is the Gematria of Echad? Ahava. So Ahava, which is the cement that causes Shalom, is the result of the belief in Echad. But if there's no belief in Echad, then there is no practical assertion of the value of Shalom. So it's a halacha that Talmidei Chachamim Bavin Shalom Ba'olam, because it confirms the major Ikar Hadas of Yichud Hashem. Well, so to summarize briefly, it means that we've discussed the concept of Shalom as it appears in the domestic scene. From the domestic scene, we've gone on to the universal, obviously, and the national, the communal scene, and tried to show through several, not only agadas, but also through several halachos, the nature of Shalom, how it ranks amongst other Jewish values and halachos, and whether or not it extends to